to me. Hold on a second.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's freezing in here.
The jacket's on that cold.
Power lines down across North and South I-5 closed, but I got around on back roads.
I call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for this April 7th. We have several work sessions scheduled that we may not have. At the moment, we only have paperwork for one. But we'll do the hearings, and we'll wait for the rest of the committee or for one more member. Then we'll work one bill and go back to hearings. So let's start by opening up a public hearing on House Bill
63. Oh, you're doing a public hearing. I'm sorry.
Public hearing on House Bill 3353. I need help. I appreciate your help.
I should help you the right way.
No, it's all right. You can help me the wrong way, too. Sandy, what do we have with 3353?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3353 comes to us at the request of Representative Kenemer. It directs education providers to mail written notice before conducting dental screenings on students at the location associated with the education provider, prescribes contents of the notice, and allows the parent or legal guardian of the student to request not to participate in the dental screening. This takes effect on July 1, 2018. Thank you.
President Kenemer, you want to...
Let's just have the advocates talk.
Okay.
I think they can say it better than I.
Jim Bunn, Charity Ludwig, and Dr. Shercliffe. Just one more after that, Mr. Chair.
There'll just be one more witness after you in this panel.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Bunn. I represent Advantage Dental based in Redmond. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 3353. This bill is relatively simple in that it changes our current system from opt-in to opt-out or passive consent for school screenings when an entire class is to be screened. The Dash 1 amendments are a complete rewrite of the original bill. Unfortunately, laid out of the hopper from LC, and we didn't have time to rework the language before it was introduced, thus necessitating a complete rewrite. The original intent and the specific language of the Dash 1 simply allow a school district that is screening an entire class to provide a written notice with an opportunity for parents to decline the screening. Today, schools must send the notice and parents must return an affirmative response or their children miss the screening. Too often the kids are missing the screenings. This bill doesn't cover 100%, but 99% would be great progress. If the school wanted to do a screening on one student or a small group of students, they would still have to use today's burdensome process of sending out screening packets, hoping parents would return them. HB 3353 is a small change that can have a big impact. And Mr. Chair, I would encourage you today to schedule this for a work session because I think it will make a big difference.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Charity Ludwig, and I'm an expanded practice permit dental hygienist and director of community dental programs for Advantage Dental based in Redmond. I oversee 14 expanded practice permit hygienists over the state of Oregon who practice predominantly in rural and frontier areas. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 3353 because during my 14 years as a dental hygienist providing community-based care in rural and frontier Oregon, I've seen firsthand the problems encountered getting children access to screenings and thereby follow up to appropriate health care. According to the CDC, tooth decay is the most common chronic childhood disease and the number one reason kids miss school. In addition, Oregon is in the process of transforming health where physical, behavioral, and oral health are aligned. My question is, what is the opposition to having oral health screenings on a passive consent when physical health and behavioral health screenings, from my understanding, can be completed in this manner in the school setting? School-based screenings provide the opportunity for early identification of oral health problems and reduces the amount of time that a student is out of class, as a trip to the dental office in the regions, in some of those regions, can take kids out of class for an entire day. Today, when we're doing stuff in the school setting, if we send home 100, if we want to screen 100 third graders, then we're likely to get back maybe 25 to 50% of the consent packets back, which means that most of the kids that are likely at that high need, or parents have not completed the consents, which eliminate the opportunity for us to identify early dental problems to then get them into the appropriate oral health care. If a teacher or a school nurse felt an individual student needed a screening for some reason, this wouldn't change this process. It's to try to get increase the number of kids that can get screened in a large group setting. In my written testimony that I provided you, you will see images taken from the community outreach screenings of children that have severe dental decay, so you can see what we're seeing in these settings, and the reason that I hope that you will be in support of moving this forward.
Thank you.
Chair Greenwick, members of the committee, it's always an opportunity to be before you to talk about oral health and helping our children and adults have better opportunity to not suffer the ravages of the tooth decay. I won't spend much time on this because I testified about it when it was attached to another bill. The bill was confusing, and so it's a separate bill, a basic, simple bill, screening bill. We hope that I'm here to testify in support of it, and I'm hoping that you'll see fit to do that.
We have scheduled a work session for a week from today on this bill.
Oh, good.
Super.
So, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, I just... one of the things we're trying to do, and you've heard me testify before, is we're trying to get the science out to the people, where the people show up, because people have a tendency not to show up until they have severe problems, and we're trying to screen them early so then we can appropriately case manage them with their to the appropriate setting so they don't use the rest of this healthcare system in an inappropriate way in the ED and in the OR, and then suffer the ravages and run the risk of, as we had a child, you know, die here well back, and we want to get them early, and we want to treat them appropriately in an appropriate setting. And so that's what we're here about to do. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We have one more witness. Is that right?
That is right, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Paul.
Kirk Mauser. Kirk Mauser. Okay. Stuck in traffic.
No?
Apparently not. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick statement of support for this. It had originally been a separate bill, and then I, in a conversation with Jim Bunn, had said, oh, that's enough like our screening bill. Maybe it should just be added to ours. And then Representative Hayden, who was a co-carrier on that bill, was worried that it might be confusing and it might sidetrack that particular bill, which had been in the hopper, and we had worked on with ODA for a long time. That is the reason it's separated. I think it's a great concept. And for clarification, it's an opt out for if a whole classroom is going to have a screening, then it's an opt out. I'm not quite sure why you add the ability for parents to opt out on the day of, when you also send something to them 2 weeks before, because I think that's harder for planning. But if you feel like that has to be done to give parents all options, then okay. But then there's an opt-in part at the end, where if you're going to do a dental screening on one or several children, not as part of a whole class, then you actually have to have written permission. So that part is the opt-in. I think those are great concepts. I'm supportive. I find the language a little bit confusing on page 1, lines 15 to 17, but I don't think it changes the intent. It's just really confusing language there. So if you were ever considering any amendments, I just wanted to offer that for the record, but I fully support this bill.
I'll try that name one more time.
Mauser, Kirk Mauser.
Okay. Is that on camera?
Just to comment, I think it's a great bill. I think we've been working on parity among oral, physical, and mental health, and Also, early intervention is key to avoiding a lot of problems. So this is a step, another step. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3353. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2044 and 2045. Madam Administrator, what do we have?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2044 comes at the request of Representative Greg Smith. It prohibits the Oregon Health Authority from recovering state's share of an overpayment of medical assistance for a prescription drug unless the overpayment resulted from fraud. 2045 is also Representative Greg Smith's bill. It's trying to fix the same problem but coming from a different direction. It authorizes the Oregon Health Authority to waive or reduce an inadvertent or unintentional overpayment of medical assistance claim for a prescription drug. This one declares an emergency and is effective on passage. And we have one individual to testify on both bills, and that's Nikki Terziak.
Ms. Terziak, you want to join us?
Good morning, Chair Greenlich, members of the committee. Thank you for having us here today. Nikki Terziak on behalf of the Oregon State Pharmacy Coalition, and in particular on behalf of a couple of pharmacists that have had unfortunate interactions with the agency. We've had one particular story, which I'll relay quickly to the committee, a pharmacist in Grants Pass who had medically necessary children that needed some psychiatric pediatric medicine, and she was compelled, of course, to provide it. They were told at the pharmacy that there were other insurances that would cover this, but for now to mark it as medically necessary and allow for the Medicaid to bring them into, this happened to be a psychiatric facility around Grants Pass area, to bring them in so that they could get treatment and service right away. This was more than a couple of children. I think it was upwards of 20 kids at the time, and they provided the medicine. And some time later, 2 years, 3 years later, the state agency called and said, "Oops, we did an audit. And we were looking at your medically necessary code and that this other insurance was supposed to come in, and gosh, it didn't. So we're going to need what we had paid you back." And so at the first piece, she was looking at about $25,000 bill back to the agency. And through some hard work, many, many hours, lots and lots of pieces of paperwork and finding evidence, going back to the agency to say, "No, this is what we had tried to do. We had interacted with you. We were instructed to use this code." But by the time 3 years passed, you know, they weren't necessarily dealing with the same person at the agency. And there was kind of no record of what had gone on. So in this particular instance, the pharmacist was able to take the bill and squeeze it down to about $8,000. But this is a small business. This is a Main Street pharmacy in Grants Pass. And so at that point, even $8,000 was quite a burden. They negotiated with the agency to be able to pay in payments, which was also helpful. But I can tell when speaking with this particular pharmacist, and it's happened to a couple of others. One of the reasons Representative Smith is introducing this is that it's also happened with a constituent pharmacist of his in Heppner. So by the time it kind of got down to the final negotiation, although it is a palatable resolution, it still has caused a lot of kind of harm and concern, and I think a little fear of interaction with the agency moving forward. So these two bills, Mr. Chair, Sandy is correct, they kind of come at different angles to the same answer. I think these two bills, though, are a great conversation starter and probably one that can be had moving forward. Having a chance to have let the pharmacists and the agency collaborate more, create more of those kind of teachable moments, and facilitate a little more of an ease on small businesses that are critical for access to health care in rural places.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Ms. Ruzia? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill. I lost the numbers. House Bill 2044 and 2045. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2310. Madam Administrator, what do we have?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2310 modifies the provisions regarding the schedule by which local public health authorities must submit local plans for applying foundational public health capabilities and implementing foundational public health programs. And I'm going to stop there because it does a lot of other things, and we have the public health experts here to walk us through it.
I'll start by making a brief comment. Why don't you call the first panel?
Okay. Commissioner Sonia Fisher, Commissioner Tammy Bainey, and Lillian Shirley.
This bill has been in the works for about 6 years now from its very beginning, and it moved this way because of the wonderful work by Commissioner Bainey and a task force specifying what modern public health looks like. And we're in a situation in the state where, because public health has been dramatically underfinanced over the past 25 years that I've been involved looking at it, or 30, I guess, the public health, our governmental public health system is really not prepared to deal with the kind of things we might deal with in a major catastrophe. It's a big job. They've done a wonderful job outlining what a modern public health system looks like, and this bill, we hope, will take it one step further in that direction. Well, please introduce yourself and go in any order you want.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Greenlich, thank you for those comments. Members of the committee, my representative, Representative Bueller. My name is Tammy Bainey, and I am chair of the Board of County Commissioners for Deschutes County. Helping to create healthier communities is a passion of mine. For nearly a decade, I have been involved in a number of initiatives working to find innovative ways to address health care concerns and issues in Oregon. Central Oregon, as you may know, was a test site for what is now called coordinated care organizations, and that framework, which began in 2008, in our community. We saw that the skyrocketing healthcare costs were resulting in a continual decline also in health outcomes. Critical to reining in medical care costs is the alignment of a strong public health system. In 2013, as mentioned, as a result of House Bill 2348 and Chair Greenlich's leadership, I had the honor of being asked to chair the Task Force on the Future of Public Health. The task force was convened to provide recommendations to the legislature on a design of a public health system for the future. The task force was truly a collaborative process. Our meetings were open to the public in order to allow for stakeholders not only to participate, but to actually follow along and be part of the process. Task force individuals included individuals from across the state, and many of them are in the room today. We wanted to make sure that we had a diverse view of the challenges facing public health in Oregon as a whole. Unlike the system we have today, the framework of the task force developed an outline for pathways for local public health to have flexibility to operationalize the foundational capabilities and programs. It opened the door for creative solutions and partnerships that work to meet a common goal versus a jurisdictional boundary. The framework also offered a better alignment of with our CCOs in order to not duplicate efforts, but rather to complement and align the good work being done. We had thoughtful and often spirited discussions on the task force, of which created the modernizing public health task force work that you are working with today. This report was the basis for House Bill 3100, which passed in 15 and adopted the recommendations from the Future of the Public Health Task Force, of which the agency will address today. As an example of how that's being utilized in local government today, in Deschutes County, we have realigned and reallocated existing staff resources. We've hired a full-time epidemiologist, which we share with two neighboring counties. We've increased our environmental health capacity by adding one FTE, and we've established a new health information officer and emergency communications specialist, another FTE. The fact remains, though, each year that we do not push forward to modernize our system, we remain vulnerable to our ability to respond to a statewide or even regional event. Despite disease outbreaks and natural disasters do not recognize jurisdictional boundaries, you and I as leaders and elected officials have a responsibility to make sure the state as a whole is prepared. But I would submit that even more importantly, we have a responsibility to get ahead of some of the challenges that are not only costing us millions of dollars in medical care costs, but also keeping those that we serve from having quality of life due to health-related issues. Children who suffer from obesity, asthma, depression are not entering the classroom ready to learn, Adults suffering from chronic illnesses struggle to maintain employment, and left unmanaged create a significant drain on medical resources. We pride ourselves in Oregon as being innovative and dedicated to health. However, in 2016, Oregon obesity increased 8%, HPV increased 190% in males, and diabetes is up 19%. Public health holds the golden ticket to addressing these and many other issues facing Oregon, but we cannot do it without funding. Oregon remains in the lowest quartile of, as Representative Greenlick mentioned, of funding for public health. Counties have long recognized the return on investment in public health and continue to invest more in public health than the state of Oregon. Another local example, Deschutes County invests $2.84 million in county general fund, shoring up funding gaps to provide mandated services we are responsible and accountable to provide. Even with this additional funding, our lack of capacity for comprehensive STD prevention and investigation has contributed to significant increases in the rate of gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis. Yes, syphilis. I support House Bill 2310. And I ask that you support House Bill 2310. We have much work to do to truly modernize our archaic system. But with this strategic alignment, we take a fragmented, uneven system and create a strong public health foundational system that is rooted in data, prioritizes prevention, promotes health through policy, as well as plan for and prepares our state to respond and protect our communities when an event occurs. We can invest upstream in public health and prevention or downstream in higher medical and societal costs. Either way, we will spend the money. The choice is ours on how we spend it. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. My name is Sonia Fisher, and I'm Clackamas County Commissioner. Here today to share with you our support of public health modernization and House Bill 2310. Public health is the foundation of a healthy society. It is absolutely critical that we invest the resources necessary for environmental health, infectious disease, access to health care, and making sure that the foundation for our citizens and the people that live in our communities are safe and healthy. What's exciting to me as a new county commissioner about public health modernization is the public policy framework that informs the local communities and all across our state as to what is important. We must have the foundation. In Clackamas County, we have taken this opportunity to realign our system and also to promote our efforts so that we are now the only county that is accredited the public health through the Public Health Accreditation Board. We have really focused on how do we create in Clackamas County access to health care and equitable outcomes for our citizens. Now, when I look, and I'm looking a little bit big picture because I'm a new county commissioner and I'm taking in all of what we are responsible for doing, Clackamas County is a microcosm for the state of Oregon, and then we have urban and rural, and we have vast diversity across our county. That is absolutely similar to the state of Oregon. And we look at what's important in public policy outcomes. It's really critical to look at how do we meet the needs of all of our citizens across our entire state. In Clackamas County, what we have done is created a framework to view this by creating health equity zones. We've taken all of the school district areas and we are looking at data which will inform our public policy so we will know where we lack services, where we need to invest resources, and where we will be able to achieve better outcomes for the people that live in our communities. With this framework, this public policy of public health modernization, this gives all local communities across the state the opportunity to really focus on what will work best in their communities, to prioritize collecting the data and the community engagement that is necessary to create the foundation that we all need for public health. Clackamas County, we support this effort. We support moving forward. This bill cleans up a lot of the great policy that has been done before. It gets us one step closer. I wouldn't be making my comments complete if I didn't make a plug for state funding for public health resources. Oregon Health, in Oregon, 3% of the Oregon Health Authority budget goes to public health. That is a very small fraction of what we need in our state to, in order to deal with the potential issues that can come up, as Chair Greenlink had mentioned. We aren't ready. We need to get ready. This legislation will get us ready, and I really urge your support.
It's obvious by the fact that we're starting with two county commissioners to point out that the counties are the official public health agencies of the state, the public health authorities, and have that responsibility. We're trying very hard to help the counties do what they want to do. Okay, boss.
Chair Greenlink, members of the committee, I'm Lillian Shirley, the Public Health Division, Director of the Public Health Division in the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm here to testify as well in support of House Bill 2310, a bill that refines the statutes related to the modernization of Oregon's public health system. In 2015, the Oregon State Legislature passed House Bill 3100, which established the foundational public health capabilities and programs to detect and prevent infectious diseases, protect the public from hazards, and respond to natural and man-made disasters in every Oregon community. And I want to thank Chair Greenlink for his continued leadership in this work. As director of Oregon's Public Health Division and the former director on the local level at Multnomah County Health Department, I've witnessed firsthand the challenges of Oregon's public health system when it faces to respond in meeting every need for every person in Oregon around protecting them for public health. In 2016, the State Public Health Division, under the direction of House Bill 3100, with all 34 local public health departments in Oregon, completed an assessment of their current capacity to provide core public health services. We now know there are gaps across the entire public health system and in every community. In more than one-third of Oregon communities, core public health programs are limited, and Oregonians are at risk for not being protected from emerging communicable diseases or natural or man-made disasters. We also now know that more than 50% of Oregonians live in an area of our state where the public health department does not have a capacity to address health disparities, leaving vulnerable communities with a disproportionate burden of poor health outcomes. Local and state health departments need to adapt and evolve if public health is to address emerging health demands and minimize current as well as looming pitfalls to take advantage of new and promising opportunities with new structures around funding nationally as well as in the state. And to achieve this, new skills and new activities will be essential to adopt and adapt strategies to combat the leading causes of illness and premature death in this time in our life, which is the 21st century and not the 19th century, which a lot of our structures were built on. Proven public health interventions offer the best chance to reduce preventable diseases, increase the population's lifespan and quality of life, and to reduce health care costs, including those to the state Medicaid system. For example, a comprehensive public health tobacco prevention program would result in 500 fewer adult smokers, and that would save more than $6 million in medical costs over the lifetime of those individuals. Oregon's plan for modernizing the public health system includes three priorities. Expand our reach through collective action with health care and other partners. Address health priorities using those foundational capabilities we were charged with. And demonstrate the impact of public health through rigorous accountability of metrics and evaluation. The public health system is already using this framework to address complex health issues, as we heard from our commissioners. And one example is the prescription drug overdose program, which works with coordinated care organizations and hospitals and health systems to end the growing prescription opiate problem in Oregon. This includes implementing a statewide opiate prescribing guidelines that all agree to, improving access to naloxone and medication-assisted treatments, and ensuring ongoing surveillance and control of controlled substance prescribing. Data from the prescription monitoring program and these initiatives that were adopted collectively across the system show these strategies are working. Between quarter three of 2015 and quarter three of 2016, Oregon saw a 9.2% decrease in opioid prescriptions.
What was that number, please?
9.2%. We are also using a modern approach to end new HIV infections in Oregon within 5 years. End HIV Oregon is a comprehensive strategy to increase the number of people who know their HIV status, ensure treatment for people living with HIV and their partners, and use proven public health methods to prevent new infections. The End HIV Oregon initiative includes an annual report card on progress toward meeting key metrics for ending HIV transmission in our state. And we look forward to sharing these reports with you next year on in December on World AIDS Day, which will be the first anniversary of that initiative. So in order to continue to modernize Oregon's public health system, House Bill 2310 refines our existing statutes. And these changes will strengthen the public health system's ability to meet priorities and strategies laid out in the statewide modernization plan. These challenges and changes will also enhance our ability to demonstrate improved population health by establishing requirements for accountability metrics. In my role, I remain committed to our important work to modernize Oregon's public health system. And thank you for an opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions to this panel? What is it, Kenny Geyer?
Thank you. Thank you, all of you, for that presentation. And you made a very compelling case for public health, and thank you to the chair for all your years of work on this. This is more around a governance framework because you've already started. I try to separate it into the funding part, which is not in this bill, the governance, which is in this bill, and then the actions that you've already been taking. So I'm wondering if you could explain in lay language what the bill does. Most of it seems to be in Section 5, but there's a lot of governance changes, how OHA and the county public health departments react to each other, and I just wonder if you can just say it in plain language. What actually is changing from how we operate now in this bill?
So a lot is not changing, frankly. I think the main emphasis is on transparency and accountability metrics, and if I would say, like, tying not just the contracting and the funding for services throughout the state to accountability, like I would say two-way accountability, and tying that to outcomes in communities for epidemiology outcomes for that. So less emphasis on looking at metrics around activities and more emphasis on metrics around outcomes for the population.
Can I follow up? Sure. So are you placing more responsibility then from state to the local, or you're just shoring up that kind of delegation of responsibility and reporting and accountability? Is anything shifting from the state to the counties, or it's more you're keeping the roles and responsibilities of what the state and the counties do the same, but just adding different requirements? I'm still not totally clear what the bill does.
I think it looks at first of all, we look at our work as a system, and we look at where capacity exists both on the state and the local level. Mm-hmm. And you heard from two of the commissioners today that have really expanded capacity locally. I know in Central Oregon, the connections with the CCO, for instance, and the early learning hubs, you know, have really worked very robustly. In a number of cases, particularly around communicable diseases, very often the state has the expertise to come in and support the locals around that area. We also feel that, once again, it doesn't sound very professional, but kind of all God's critters got a place in the choir, you know. And if we really map that out about starting with the communities and who's in the community and what their issues are, that we will build our responses around that. I think that in the past we've concentrated more on just activities, and now we're concentrating more on what does the community need and how can the response be built to achieve those goals.
I think there is another issue that's a part of it, and that's the fact that, as I pointed out originally, the county is the public health authority. The fact is many counties don't have the ability to maintain that authority. In fact, in many counties, it's a big problem. And what the notion of public health modernization does, it defines what services need to be available to the citizens of Oregon and parses out how that can happen. It may happen at the county level, it may happen in counties joining together, as Commissioner Bainey pointed out, an epidemiologist working in three different counties to do a job. It gives us a roadmap over the next decade, if we get the resources to carry it out, that will assure that the citizens have services available, whether they're provided by the county, by a public agency, or by a private agency like a CCO or a hospital, or by the state working with the county. Commissioner Bainey, you're nodding.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, it's exactly right. It allows us to continue forward in looking at ways, not of how we as one provide certain capabilities and foundational capabilities, but how we as a community provide that. And whether that's with a nonprofit partner, whether that's Park County, whether that's privatizing some of the services that had been provided by the county, some of those more clinical services, it really allows us to lift the veil on that jurisdictional boundary and look at who are we serving and how do we serve them best. And I think it gives, it's a little agnostic to whether that's just Deschutes County or we do that in concert with our partners. Certainly a lot of regional work for us. We serve a lot of the same constituents. They work in one community, they live in another. So again, it's looking at as a whole how we provide that. Conversely, there are some counties that had been when this was originally drafted back in 14-15. We're looking at turning back to the state of Oregon, their local public health authority. This outlines a framework for that to occur or not occur. But I think this offers the flexibility for communities to determine how it is in which they meet these foundational capabilities and allows to lift that veil a bit about feeling like it as a single county has to be, you have to provide all of it.
Kenimer?
Just wanted to say it's nice to see our new commissioner from Clackamas County. Congratulations and thank you.
Speaking as an alum, huh?
What?
Speaking as a commissioner alum?
I think that's part of it, yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I also want to acknowledge, I really appreciate this bill for a couple reasons. One of them, I appreciate that you're looking into the specific populations in the counties that we all live in. As a state, we want to help everybody, but we, as a state, we're kind of blanketing supports and services across the state. But this bill is really focusing on we know our own home. We know the needs of our community. And our demographics are changing in each community, and the needs of those communities are changing. So I really appreciate that this bill is really looking at it from I guess I see a county as like my home. We know our home. We know what we need to change or improve. And I appreciate that that's how you're looking at it. Folks in the county know if there's a specific target on reaching or reducing obesity rates or diabetes rates so that the efforts go towards that. So yes, I just want to commend this presentation and this bill. I think it's going in the right direction, and the work that has been happening for a very long time. I'm excited about this, and I very, very much support this bill.
Let's call the next panel.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Dr. Jeff Luck, Rebecca Pollock, I'm a public health person, and David Bangsberg.
I mean, the four things it does. I mean, of course, I agree with modernization.
Dean Bangsberg is a wonderful new dean we have now at the OHSU-PSU School of Public Health. This is your virgin performance here at the committee, but I hope we'll see you back many times.
Thank you very much, sir. Go ahead, Jeff.
Great. So, good morning, and thank you, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Luck. I'm currently chair of the Public Health Advisory Board and have served on the board since 2012. I'm also an associate professor at Oregon State University's College of Public Health and Human Sciences. As Commissioner Bainey described in House Bill 3100, the legislature recognized that all Oregonians would benefit from a modernized public health system that was designed to meet clear health objectives at the state and the local level. That bill required an in-depth assessment of public health activities in Oregon. Every local health department and state public health program participated and gave us a picture of a public health system that's more detailed than any other state has. And as Director Shirley noted, the results of that assessment were quite striking. No local health department is currently able to provide all of the foundational programs and capabilities needed to protect and promote health. Shortcomings exist at the state level also, and there's wide variation across local health departments in how well they're able to address specific public health needs. That assessment also evaluated the resources needed to provide these foundational public health services and estimated that an additional $105 million per year, which is approximately 50% above current funding levels, is needed to close the gap between current implementation and full provision of foundational public health services to all Oregonians. It will, of course, take several biennia to close a funding gap that large, but the proposed additional step was small, $30 million in the 2017-19 biennium, which is about $3.75 per Oregonian per year. And because that the assessment identified so many gaps, our board recommended focusing the early investments on communicable disease and environmental health, two capabilities where emerging threats, as other panelists have described, are all too clear, and a few key capabilities like emergency preparedness and improved data collection. Also, specific accountability measures will track the impact of any new funding. Representative Greenlick, along with Senator Monters Anderson, met with our board last fall to reiterate their desire for a 10-year roadmap to build from these early steps toward a fully modernized public health system. That roadmap, known as the Public Health Modernization Plan, has been submitted to the legislature. And with regard to resources, the Public Health Advisory Board stated last year that, quote, especially in a very constrained fiscal environment, funding to begin public health modernization will yield tangible benefits for Oregonians. I and my colleagues applaud the efforts of the legislature to begin that modernization by funding it in the 2017-19 biennium budget. Thank you.
And Dr. Lux's presence on this panel points out we have two budding schools of public health in the state. One of the OHSU, PSU, represented by Dr. Bangle, and one represented at OSU by you. So we're very, very proud. It shows us the advantage we have to have those kind of resources here in the state. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Good morning, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Pavlock. I am Director of Public Policy for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I'm also an appointed member to the Public Health Advisory Board. I fill the role of a healthcare representative that's not a accredited care organization, and I'm an alum of the Portland State MPH program. So very happy to be here, and happy Public Health Week. This is a National Public Health Week, so thank you for scheduling this bill. On behalf of Oregon's 62 hospitals health systems, we are in support of House Bill 2310 and the continued work to modernize the public health system. Commissioner Bainey said, there's been a lot of work done over the past several years, stemming from 2013 due to Representative Greenlick's leadership on the regionalization concept, and a lot of partners have come together on this work. And from a hospital perspective, we know that much of what shapes health happens outside of the hospital walls. This work is very important to us. A modern public health system will ensure that there are foundational programs in place in all communities in every corner of the state, not just some corners, and that this creates additional opportunity for hospitals, health systems, and public health to work together. We're doing a lot of partnership right now. Some good examples are our work around improving quality of care and health outcomes through emergency department exchange information. We do come together to prepare for and respond to emergencies, recently thinking about Ebola and Zika, and then we coordinate during natural disasters as well. But this bill and this work will help us to continue to build those systems and that infrastructure. We also work together to proactively plan community health improvements. For example, the Healthy Columbia Willamette Collaborative, which is in the Portland metro area, is a partnership between 15 hospitals, 2 CCOs, and 4 local health authorities. And they are doing some great work around identifying what are the community needs for that area, and also includes our partners out in Clark County, Washington, because we know that health doesn't follow political boundaries. So it's a really great regional partnership. We feel this bill takes public health modernization to the next phase and creates additional opportunities for our systems to continue to work together, coordinate, and gain efficiencies. In particular, directing the Public Health Advisory Board to identify and establish accountability metrics is a really great opportunity to align public health modernization with broader health system transformation goals in Oregon. And we feel that's a really tangible deliverable from this bill that can relate to some result and outcomes-based collaboration. So on behalf of the Hospital Association, we support this bill, and I hope you do, too. I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is Dr. David Bangsberg, and I'm here today as the Dean of the Oregon Health Sciences University, Portland State University School of Public Health. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2310, which helps move public health modernization forward in Oregon. Nationwide, health departments are being called to meet new health challenges, which include emerging infectious diseases, threats from man-made and natural disasters, increasing rates of chronic diseases, including mental health, and recent responses to Ebola and Zika viruses. In Oregon, we can look to seasons of drought and flooding, and looming threat of Cascadia subduction zone earthquake and the October 2015 shooting at Umpqua County Community College to understand how demands on the health systems are shifting and varied. At the same time, resources for public health have dwindled. According to the Trust for America's Health, Oregon ranks 31st in the nation for state per capita spending on public health. Oregon relies heavily on federal funds for public health, and further cuts to the public health are anticipated as part of the new administration's budget priorities. History tells us that when resources are diverted from critical public health programs, we see an increase in disease prevalence. For example, sexually transmitted diseases in Oregon are on an alarming rise. In 2007, only 26 cases of infectious syphilis were reported statewide. This has increased 2,000% to 571 cases statewide in 2016. Since 2014, 10 infants have been born with congenital syphilis, entirely preventable, and rising STDs result from a decline in public health resources to identify and treat affected partners. Without additional resources, we will expect this trend to continue. Oregon is among the first states to respond to these urgent needs by modernizing its public health system. A modern public health system is one that ensures its workforce is well-trained to address our greatest health threats. As Dean of the OHSU and PSU School of Public Health, I'm committed to supporting Oregon's efforts to modernize its public health system, and I'm proud of Oregon's work will serve as a model for other states to follow. Please join me in supporting Health Bill 2310. Thank you very much.
Any questions to this panel?
Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Bueller?
Not a question, just a comment. A big thank you to Dean Bangsberg for coming to Oregon. He was a classmate of mine at Johns Hopkins, and we are very fortunate to have his level of expertise here in Oregon.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back home.
I'll take some credit being on the search committee.
I'll take some credit being on the Friends Committee.
All right. Thank you very much. Right. I'm going to take a pause in this public hearing. There are 4 more witnesses. We'll get to them in a moment. But we've begun to get a little paperwork, and I'd like to do some work before we start losing any members of the committee. So I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2393. Madam Minister, where are we at?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2393. Was introduced as a committee bill. We had a public hearing on this bill on March 8th. It specifies case manager duties in the event that a case manager receives notice that a person for whom the case manager provides services will have life-sustaining procedures withheld or withdrawn. This bill is about that case manager sharing that information when this individual does not have a designated representative. It has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no amendments, Mr. Chair.
If you remember, the case manager doesn't have any authority in a circumstance like this. It just gives the case manager the ability to provide information with the people who have to make those end-of-life decisions. Can I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2393 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves House Bill 2393 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the bill? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Aye.
Representative Buehler.
Yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Aye.
Representative Kennedy.
Aye.
Representative Maelstrom.
Excuse.
Representative Hack.
Excuse.
Vice Chair
Nose. Yes.
Vice Chair Hayden.
Yes.
Chair Green.
Aye. The motion carries. I'll carry the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 2393 and open a work session on House Bill 2931. Madam Administrator, what do we have?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is also a committee bill at the request of Paul Trudeau. We had a public hearing on this bill on March 27th. This clarifies the educational requirements for a behavior analysis interventionist registration requirements. There are no amendments. There's no fiscal and no revenue impact on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Let's put this on the consent calendar. This is the one that if you have a master's degree, you don't have to have a high school degree, right?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Seems perfectly reasonable. Can I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2931 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And then it would be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Nose moves House Bill 2931 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion of the bill? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Kennedy.
Aye.
Representative Buehler. Yes. Representative Alonzo Neal. Aye. Representative Kennedy. Aye. Representative Maelstrom. Excused.
Representative
Hack. Excused. Vice Chair Nose. Aye. Vice Chair Hayden. Aye. Chair Green. Aye. Motion carries 2931 to the consent calendar with a due pass recommendation. Close the work session on House Bill 2931 and open a work session on House Bill 3363. Madam Administrator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3363 is at the request of Representative Noble. We had a public hearing on the bill on March 29th. This changes the term osteopath to osteopathic physician, clarifies that the doctors of osteopathic medicine practice medicine as physicians. There is a dash one amendment. That amendment just references the existing Osteopathic Medicine Act and the practice under those current definitions. And we have a no fiscal and a no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
On the dash one?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
May I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopt the dash one amendment to House Bill 3363, dated March 29, 2017.
Representative Nose moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3363, dated 3/29/17. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection? So moved. Representative Nose.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3363 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves House Bill 3363 to the floor as amended with a dash one with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Aye.
Representative Buehler.
Yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Aye.
Representative Kennedy.
Aye.
Representative Maelstrom.
Excuse.
Representative Hack.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Nose.
Yes.
Vice Chair Hayden.
Yes.
Chair Greenlee.
Yes. Motion carries. Representative Noble will carry it. Close the work session on House Bill 3363.
Carry that over.
No chance we'll get paperwork on that?
There's another amendment coming, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
We'll carry over House Bill 2979 to Monday. We're going to have a lot of work to do next week. While everybody's here, let me also remind us, remind the committee that we'll be going till 6 on Monday.
No.
No, on Wednesday. Till 6 on Wednesday until 11 on Friday next week.
At least.
And with any luck at all, we won't have any other night sessions. But next a week from Monday is the final time we have to work on our bill. We're keeping that Monday schedule open right now because we expect we'll have a lot of carryovers to clean up on Monday.
So be prepared to stay late Monday as well.
We don't have permission.
Probably not.
It might be a little bit, but we don't have have permission for the extended time like Wednesdays and Fridays.
We'll slop over as we usually do. But
we're going to get done.
Okay, back to the hearing. Would you call the next group, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the public hearing on House Bill 2310. Carrie Brigotti, Charlie Fanton, Tricia Mortel.
Who's the last one?
And the last one is Eva Ripito.
Monday, we may run a tiny bit over.
But I don't see Eva.
She was here. There she is.
She might have to tiny bits.
You can't hide, Eva. We're keeping track of you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. My name is Carrie Brigotti, and I am the Public Health Administrator at the Center for Human Development in Union County, and I'm co-chair of the Public Health Advisory Board. I am here today to support House Bill 2310. Since House Bill 3100 passed in 2015, we have been working to modernize Oregon's public health system. This work included the modernization assessment that you've heard other panelists talk about today. When we did this, being from a rural county, I actually assumed there would be a lot of differences between urban and rural counties, counties that had more resources financially, and that is definitely not what we found. We found that there are meaningful gaps across the entire system, that the gaps are not uniform, and that they do not appear in the same places in every organization. So for me, from a rural health department, this was really one of the most meaningful takeaways. There are gaps across the entire system. And to protect the public's health, we need the same level of expertise and capacity everywhere. So our assessment in Union County found that there are gaps in all of the areas that the Public Health Advisory Board has prioritized for this first phase of modernization. And one of them that's come up quite frequently today is communicable disease. So recently we have seen increases in almost all of the diseases that we work with on a regular basis. Most of them have been mentioned here today. We're also preparing for the emerging threats that we've talked about as well. A concrete example is TB. In the past, we've rarely, if ever, had cases of TB that we've needed to investigate or treat in our county. And over this past year, we've had multiple cases that were either suspected and a few active cases that we've had to treat. Many of the people that we're working with have medical complexities that make their cases more difficult. Many of them have issues like homelessness that make our job managing that work and working with them quite time consuming and challenging. So we have a part-time CD nurse, and if we have one of these cases, it often takes her a full week of work, if not more, to investigate, diagnose, and treat this case. And if we need to treat, we're talking about months of work. This is on top of our other duties. So many of the diseases that we've talked about, like chlamydia, gonorrhea today, we deal with those and we're seeing increases there. To my knowledge, we don't have syphilis in Union County yet, but we've been preparing for it because we know what's happening across the state. We're monitoring that and we need to be ready to respond. She's often getting help from others in our health department, so it's not just her. And so I think the bottom line is that it's very time-consuming work, and it's taking away from our other duties. I wanted to point out, as others have, that
some of the cases that we're working with have contacts or come from other counties. So communicable diseases do not know jurisdictional boundaries. And that's something that, why it's important for all of us to be at the same level. And finally, I just wanted to say that this constant cycle of reacting to the next disease or outbreak keeps us from doing the work of prevention to actually stop the diseases and stop the outbreaks. And this is really the cornerstone of the modern governmental public health system that we envision for Oregon. This is why we support modernization, and I thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
What's the population of Union County?
We're around 25,000 people.
And to what extent do you do work with the other neighboring counties in your area?
So I would say in some areas we work quite frequently with our neighbors. I think that one of the things when I was thinking about talking with you today is that when we're kind of constantly reacting to these outbreaks or diseases, or, you know, really even just trying to hire a nurse, our neighbor contacted us the other day and they were like, we need a nurse. And I said, oh, yeah, we do, too. You know, we've been recruiting for 3 months and we don't have one resume. So we're kind of trying to do those daily operations, and it really makes it hard to have some of those meaningful conversations with our neighbors. I mean, we have ideas, but, you know, stepping away from the real day-to-day work and the needs of our community to have that that conversation with our neighbors about how to work together is challenging. So we do it in early learning, especially so for some of our more maternal child health work, but there's definitely a lot more that we could do.
Thank you. That's good.
Morning, Chair Greenlick, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. Good morning, and once again, happy National Public Health Week. It's auspicious that we're having this hearing this week. I'm Charlie Fountain. I'm Public Health Administrator of Benton County, and I'm here testifying on behalf of a coalition of local health officials, which I'm chair. And we're in strong support of House Bill 2310 with the critical addition of the Dash 1 amendment, which will put in place the first phase of implementation of modernization. Modernized Oregon public health system will be able to work on core public health issues more efficiently across county lines, but also with healthcare systems, coordinated care organizations, early learning hubs, and many others. As you are probably aware, Chloe and a number of our colleagues are hard at work on a Dash 2 technical amendment to this bill, and there will be more details on that forthcoming. Yeah, I think there are pieces of it that are still at work, too.
But there is a Dash 2 on the list.
There is a Dash 2 out. While local health departments have been able to scratch the surface of modernization approaches with our current capabilities, full implementation and coordinated tracking of modernized outcomes will require additional state investments. And once again, to very briefly use communicable disease as an example, the 2015 statewide modernization assessment showed that the 34 local health departments in Oregon have just over 41% of the necessary communicable disease staffing to meet the criteria for a modernized communicable disease system. In Benton County, I have local funding that provides over half of the budget for my communicable disease program, and that includes a local voter-approved option levy. But even with that funding, I've been able to preserve only a very bare-bones staff of two nurses. And with the addition of local funding, I still face a shortfall of $233,000 to meet the target for a modernized communicable disease program. In my county, communicable disease reports have increased 50% between 2009 and 2015, and at the same time, state general fund financial support has remained virtually level, but personnel costs have increased at a double-digit rate. The difference from 2009 is that those two nurses now spend all of their time responding to, investigating disease reports, and responding to outbreaks such as the meningococcal outbreak that's still going on at Oregon State University. Earlier, They used to be able to get out of the office, work directly with schools, businesses, nursing homes, and others to provide technical support and assistance aimed at preventing infectious diseases before they occur. Preventive community outreach and engagement are key elements of a modernized communicable disease program. In addition to providing capacity for reestablishing disease prevention work, the added resources that would come with modernization would enable us to fulfill unmet needs for educating local medical community about emerging disease threats, analyzing local trends and patterns in order to better recognize threats. Importantly, improving direct communication with our increasingly diverse populations to help them recognize and prevent illnesses. And perhaps most importantly, developing improved collaborative work networks and implementing more efficient service models with our colleagues in other counties. Local public health departments are the front lines for protecting Oregon's entire population by preparing for, preventing, and responding to illness and injuries. My county is contributing all it can, but additional state resources are needed in my department and as much or more in those of my colleagues, not only to fulfill our current mandates, but to meet the growing and changing challenges of the 21st century. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Greenlink, members of the committee. I'm Tricia Mortel, and I'm the Public Health Division Manager for Washington County. I, again, would like to comment on House Bill 2310, along with the proposed amendments, focused on a successful initiation of Oregon public health modernization, which has been mentioned, has been in process for many years now. Washington County experiences similar challenges that other local public health organizations in Oregon face: increases in population, increases in community health issues, increases in health inequities, coupled with flat or decreasing state and federal funds. As my colleagues have described, we are currently in a situation where public health is often forced to attend to the very basics of investigating and responding to diseases or responding to health threats without any community prevention activities. I have a new example for you. Washington County was recently faced with a public health threat which involved woods burning and particulate matter 2.5. When this issue came to light, we had no resources within our environmental health team to investigate the situation, develop strategies, or implement any plans. We were able to cobble together local funding towards those efforts, but it meant pulling resources from other important issues, such as preventing foodborne illnesses in our communities. This story is repeated time and time again. We have limited resources in research and epidemiology, so we're forced to stop work on suicide prevention assessment to turn our focus to opioid overdose. We're currently considered, again, the healthiest county in the state, Washington County is, but that isn't true for all of our residents. We know health inequities exist, but we have no comprehensive funding or comprehensive plans for dealing with health inequities. We've been working diligently alongside our CCOs, early learning partners, and our regional public health partners to discuss and realize efficiencies through healthcare transformation, early learning transformation, regional approaches. We prioritized activities, shifted resources, and created new partnerships. But without additional funding, we will continue to only be able to attend to the most pressing and immediate needs, putting our community at continued risk for the next potential health outbreak or community threat. As a division manager, I do not feel confident to tell my residents that I'm doing the work that I'm charged to do in preventing disease and disability. So I ask for support to roll out public health modernization along with the funding to do so. This request is the first step in the process of a fully funded, fully modernized public health system, a state and local partnership, assuring that we can prevent disease and disability, protect our community from health threats, and promote the conditions for individuals to choose healthy lifestyles. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you call the next witness, please?
Eva Ripito.
Good morning, Callie. Can you come up with me?
Oh, sure. Chair Greenlink, vice chairs, members of the committee, my name is Eva Ripito. I get to wear two hats today. My usual hat of political coordinator with AFSCME Council 75. We represent frontline county health workers around the state, and it's in that capacity that I serve on the Public Health Advisory Board as the member who represents individuals who provide public health services directly to the public. It's a mouthful. It's the longest title ever. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in support of House Bill 2310 and public health modernization. AFSCME members and AFSCME knows that public health is greatly underfunded. I think that Chair Greenlink said it really well at the beginning of when you opened up the public hearing. It's been, I can't remember exactly what you said, but greatly underfunded for far too long. And we can know our public health authorities can no longer do more with less. So I think that the Dash Ones and the Dash Two amendments move us in the direction of getting us funding and setting up the steps to move modernization forward. After the needs assessment was done, the FAB was looked at the gaps that were statewide. Public Health Advisory Board. Thank you. Looked at the assessment, realized that there were gaps that were statewide, and made the recommendation to move forward with rolling out statewide various program foundational programs and capabilities. And to do it, doing this would ensure that each of our local public health authorities and state public health division would have funding to make sure that all of these things were happening at the same time and no county or region was left behind. As Carrie pointed out, you know, communicable diseases don't know political boundaries. So we need to be able to have each of our local public health authorities respond accordingly. I think that was, I wanted to be brief, so I'll just keep it at that. If you have any questions. Oh, I did want to say that I think at looking at the Dash 2s, there need to be a few tweaks to it to help us move forward in the statewide implementation. And I'm happy to participate in discussions about that.
We don't have a lot of time, remember.
Exactly.
We're scheduled a work session on Wednesday, and we need any other amendments 2 days before that. So let's keep moving.
Yeah.
Morgan?
Good morning, Chair Greenlake, members of the committee. My name is Morgan Cowling, and I'm the executive director of the Coalition of Local Health Officials. I thought I'd come up and see if there were any questions about the Dash 1 or Dash 2s and make sure that the committee had enough information about those amendments. The Dash 1s make some changes to the initial bill that would start the implementation of kind of the first phase of public health modernization in the areas that many of the previous speakers have mentioned: communicable disease, environmental health, and the foundational capabilities. Leadership, assessment equity, and assessment and epidemiology and health equity. So that would begin the first phase of the actual work to implement. And I assume that that amendment may have a fiscal and may need a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. The Dash 2 amendment is a little bit more technical in nature and makes some changes to the initial bill. And thank you for the reminder about the pressing deadline. We will get right to work on that.
Great. Yeah, the bill obviously will need to go to the Ways and Means Committee. I also, I think some of you know, have a bill in the Revenue Committee for a $2 a pack cigarette tax with the proceeds dedicated to the modernization of public health. I'm hoping we'll be able to talk about that. I'm sorry.
It's just more a comment, Mr. Chair, which is, you know, is I'm glad we're doing this. I just think it's a be remiss without pointing out that all this decline or disinvestment or whatever word you want to use with public health, I think, coincides super nicely with the change in our property tax structure. County-based system changed our property tax structure.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Well, except we also, if you look at the data, are like the 48th state in the country in the per capita state support of the, right. the public health system.
Although he said 31, which was shocking to me because I've always thought it was between 46 and 48.
But this is a county-based system, and we have really frustrated our ability of local government to operate and grow based on Measure 5 and Measure 50, and here we are.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm on the revenue committee, Mr. Chair.
You have it. Well, get my cigarette tax done.
Try.
I'll try.
Thank you all for coming down. This is really important to me and important to the state, and I really appreciate it. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2310. Remind that we have one bill carried over. And we have already announced. Anything else, Madam Minister? Next week's going to be a tough week, guys. So gird your loins, whatever that means. We are adjourned.
Okay.